It's Wednesday, August 31st, 2016, and welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
And today I'm Brian Poulter, and I'll be him tomorrow as well.
You were yesterday,
yes,
too.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. And obviously, we have Brian Poulter with us again this time, so welcome, Brian.
Thank you very much.
And this time, we're just going to kind of have a little bit more of a laid-back, relaxed conversation about back to school. We're in our second week here at EIU of classes, so we've survived the first week.
And they're going to reward us with Labor Day this coming Monday,
right? That's right. We have a Monday off, so that will be nice. But we're off to a great start, and we've got some pretty spectacular tools that we have available to us today as teachers. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and some of the pedagogy and how you actually mix the technology and the pedagogy together for this episode. So sit back, and here we go. Welcome to our Back to School segment this time, and with us today we have Brian Poulter, a familiar guest here on Tech Talk for Teachers.
Hello, everybody.
And I've invited Brian in today to kind of talk about the, actually we're in week number two of the semester.
It's amazing how fast it's gone by already.
So the last time we spoke, about a month ago, I mentioned all the different technical things on my end anyway in the Instructional Technology Center to gear up and get ready for that first day of school, actually at that time still finishing the summer semester. So we've made a lot of changes. We're off to a great start, another great start to the school year here. We've had a number of upgrades. The ITC lab's been upgraded. We've added some additional software. In fact, today I'm installing some SPSS statistical software. We have three sections of graduate classes in the ITC this semester. Using that for statistical analysis. So they wanted that access, so we've installed that. And then all of our classrooms, I think I mentioned on the last episode that we were upgrading to Windows 10 in the classroom. So that upgrade has occurred, and we're off and going in our college, College of Education Professional Studies. Brian's in a different college, but in our college we have smart boards in all of ours, and I believe you have a few smart boards.
Probably 70% of our classrooms.
Yeah. So all of our smart boards, we have operational and working with Windows 10. And kind of a side benefit of that for the Windows 10, since it's a touchscreen interface, you can actually use just the interface itself and not the smart board software. So I was showing someone's going to be teaching Facebook, an evening class, or adult learning is going to be teaching a Facebook class, I believe, tomorrow evening, and they had never used a smart board. I thought that was pretty neat to be able to, you know, click a link, and you know, they're not going to have to walk back and forth to the computer, so that's all going.
As long as you can stop them from pulling out a Sharpie and writing on the smart board by mistake.
Yeah, that's why we take those all away, put on the Expo markers that you can actually erase. That's happened a couple of times, those Sharpies, so got to be careful with that. It takes a little bit of scrubbing to get those off. I will say that our smart boards, you know, we've been very satisfied with them. Somebody was asking me the other day, we put our first one in 1999, the last millennia, so they've lasted a long time for us.
Well, I think some of those are still going, too.
They are.
They're really hardy. I mean, it's not like something you buy for 4 years and then you got to replace it.
Right. And so that's added to the longevity. However, they are kind of on the tail end of their life cycle. And there's some changes and things and some new software and with iPads and things like that. That didn't exist back when they first come to market. So a lot of changes have happened over the years. So what's up in your world in the faculty side and gearing up and getting ready for your classes?
Well, you're partly part of this, too. It used to be in some of our classrooms, because we share them, you had a choice of either using a Windows machine or a Mac machine. And while in journalism, we teach almost all on Mac because of the visual software, Photoshop, and all those sorts of things. In those classrooms, we just decided to pull the Macs out because it was confusing having two machines. And the good news for end users and students is that it really, really doesn't matter if you're in a Windows or Mac anymore. They basically have gotten back together and are running the similar software, and unless you're using specific, you know, FaceTime or something that's right. Unique, and there always are substitutes for those, right. It really doesn't matter which machine you use. I think it just comes down to which is easier for your people to support and use.
Yeah, and then throw in the cloud technology on top of that with just the browser access available, so that operating system.
And even within our classes, we recommend that students, because here at Eastern, like 90% of students come to the university with two computers now. I forgot what our stance was.
I was talking with our ITS department the other day. I think we're getting close to four. I think we're between three and four computer or devices per student.
Right.
So,
and they're always asking me. I get this from, in fact, I talked to a parent for over an hour, a really nice gentleman, and now I have his son in a couple classes. Should he buy the Apple? We recommend an Apple machine because most of our faculty are a little more familiar with them. But we also, on our website, say, here's the comparable Windows machine. And so he called and talked to me about that. And the good news is they both run Adobe products. So right. I said to him, whatever you're comfortable with, or if you can get a better deal on X, just here's the basic criteria of processors and all these things we think recommended. So the good news is that battle was heavily fought 20 years ago. People really got...
Well, it's still ongoing. You know, on the Windows side in education and things, I'm a big proponent of digital inking and touch screens. So there are certain advantages. And in K-12 land, the Chromebooks are coming on strong, one because of the affordability factor. But there's always trade-offs on those different ecosystems. And I play in all three, you know, whether it be the Google, the Windows, or the Apple. There's certain trade-offs whenever you go for it. But the common glue is this cloud technology available now. So I actually use Office 365 daily on my Chromebook.
I think the key for me walking in the classroom is, do you have a way for me to export the video content that my device is kicking out so I can put it into a projector?
Right. What is the final result, the outcome? Is it an MP4, whatever the standard?
Or even more basic than that is, so in our labs we have, you know, desktops hardwired in there, but there's a VGAN port. So I have the adapter, and I've actually taught classes off my iPhone because...
Oh, yeah.
I have the website there, or I have an application, or I'm actually showing them how to use the cell phone to make photographs. Mm-hmm. Well, what makes the most sense? Show them what I'm seeing on my cell phone. So I have that proprietary little $30 Apple adapter. But once you have that...
Right. We're doing the same thing in the lab next door. We've been using the Miracast with the Windows 10 tablets since 2013 when it first came out. But that is also compatible with Android. So I have an Android smartphone, and it's really a shift with it. I always call it technology-enabled, you know, teaching and learning, because the devices are there to support the learning. But it's really a shift to know that you're walking around essentially, you know, with a portable, you know, computer in your pocket with access to the world's information, to be able to, you know, take that out of your pocket, project it up on the screen wirelessly. I have the Samsung S7. It's called Quick Connect. You literally swipe down, hit Quick Connect. There is a little magic black box, which is this Miracast receiver, and you're projecting, you know, in a matter of seconds.
And you can put PowerPoints or PDFs of whatever it is you want to talk about. And when I go to conferences, it's always my backup. I prefer to plug in my portable laptop.
Or if you have scanny Wi-Fi at a conference.
But if it's down or it's not working, I have a phone in my pocket usually. And so I can just, with that adapter, I'm good to go.
And I think it's really important for the teachers and faculty to go out there and model that. You know, a lot of times we think our students are so much further ahead of us, but there's a number of students that don't know you can wirelessly project. And like in this case, it's a little $50 adapter that you can plug into an HDMI port. So there's no reason a student can do that and put it at home on their HDTV. And as I said, these phones are basically computers now.
And I think one of the smartest things we did is sort of what I call immersion technology teacher, rather than teaching the technology, teach the technology with the subject matter.
Yes.
I teach a class that is a core class for journalism majors and minors. It's basically a photo class, and that used to require a prerequisite. We decided, no, there's no prerequisite for that class, so it's likely that's the first class they'll take. And because it's a photo class, I use computers and softwares and servers and clouds and Photoshop and really kind of stretch them in terms of what they know. And we just decided it's going to be my job as part of that class to make sure they're immersed in this technology and know how to use it. So when they take News Writing 1 or the online production classes or our video classes or whatever, We don't have to teach them how to use shortcuts and keys and clouds and servers. And if you can figure out in your curriculum early on what class is going to, part of the function of that class is to teach them computer literacy and how to use the softwares you use, you're going to be heads and shoulders ahead of everybody else because they're still going to be teaching this technology.
Right. That, it's not about the button pushing and click here and click there, because that is very limited utility, because I can guarantee you in the age of the cloud, they're going to change the interface, you know, on a whim. You'll walk in some, in fact, it happened to us last week. Microsoft's Office 365, their home splash screen, they changed the format. You know, it's a little bit more flatter, responsive design. But for me, where I do a lot of the instructional videos, that means all my screenshots are out of date. You know, all the videos and the screencasting technology, it has that old look. And it's funny how quickly something can look, I mean, literally overnight, you know, you can be dated. Something like that. They didn't move things a lot. You can't do that on a user base, but whenever you're a Google or a Microsoft and you flip the switch on that cloud computer, you're doing it for millions of people at a time.
Well, now even Adobe, because the way you buy Adobe products is you basically rent them and it updates them for you. And literally the splash screen will change from week to week. And I'm like, uh-oh, what did they move on me? I've literally walked into class and say, and now I'll go pick this tool. And I look at the menus and I go, hold on a second, let me figure out where they hit it this
right.
week.
And again, that's an excellent learning lesson for the students to see you on your feet thinking, I mean, welcome to the world. That's where we're at. And those are the skills, the life skills that we're trying to teach our students. So that's great. The other thing, you know, living in this fast-paced world, whenever you go to a print medium like that, imagine if you were teaching a class and, you know, we have a textbook rental system, but many colleges don't, and they might be buying a book on Adobe Creative Suite, a physical hard copy book, and knowing that that can be outdated, you know, again, overnight. So there's a lot of electronic resources, which kind of leads me into another thing I'll just briefly mention. OneNote. OneNote is a digital note-taking tool, and it can actually, I use it all the time as kind of a textbook substitute. And one of the reasons that I like it for that is I can make it anything I want. At the click, again, a click of a button, a tap of a screen, whatever. So you can constantly add and update that. And I know this time you're getting your feet wet a little bit. I think this time you took the OneNote plunge a little bit for one of your classes.
Well, it's completely your fault.
Yeah.
We have a platform here at Eastern, which by our university, we have to be certified to teach online, and I've gone through that process, but I just really never gelled with it to the point where I wanted to embrace it. And you started showing me the possibilities of what OneNote can do in OneDrive. It's sort of its companion for storage. And I was like, this is wonderful because it's very flexible.
Right.
The various online class teaching environments tend to say you're going to teach this way and you're going to follow our system.
More of a template-driven system.
Right, which doesn't work for me because of how the subject matter I teach and how I choose to teach and my teaching style. And OneNote and OneDrive and the way they work together allows me to disseminate and receive information in the way that I think makes me more efficient, because I'm more comfortable with it, my students are more comfortable with it, and it's really, really flexible as I use it. And I started messing with it this summer, and I've only been teaching with 2 weeks, but I've already said this is the way I'm going to teach my online classes. I know Microsoft still has to kick out a online grading system,
which they're working on. The Microsoft Classroom, which is out now.
And a discussion forum setup, which I think they're working on. But even though I'm trained in this other software, I've already decided that I like how this software works, and this is how I'm going to teach online next summer.
It is a paradigm shift. I remember talking to you this summer about starting with that. And I jokingly use the phrase, walk before you run, because there's so much to know, because it is so versatile. Pick that one core thing that you want to do, that functionality that you do. And I think it's very interesting the way that that you're implementing it, because you are targeting, you know, the use for what we call in education personalized learning, where you can differentiate your curriculum. And you literally, with this class notebooks, every student has their own private notebook that you can have conversations within online that only the teacher and that particular student see. So you can provide that feedback, that formative feedback. And it'll be interesting as you go through the semester, seeing how much more you could personalize some of that instruction.
What I really like about it is, first of all, there's a space, is it Classroom Resources? Is that the name of the floor?
There's a collaboration space, a content space.
Content space. And so this allows me to give them a document that if they choose to download it, if I leave it that way, they can edit, or I give a handout.
Right. It's like passing papers out in a class, except the online version of that.
Or yesterday I gave them a sheet of links, and we went through in class, but if you want to go back through there, and one of them, that's going to be related to my tech pick later in this podcast, so they can go back. So I teach photography. It allows me to give them a PDF of the manual. I just go get it from Canon. Canon doesn't care if I give it away. They're giving it away. So now they have the camera manual. I don't have to track down printed copies of this. But the magic for me is that each student and I share a notebook that only that student and I can see. When they turn in a photograph, I have them do two things. They insert the photograph in the page that they've created. So it's like a web page. I can see what the photo looks like. They can actually drag on it and even decide how big I'm going to see it. So when I get it, I can initially see, oh, that's the photo I'm looking at. And then they can also, on that page, insert as an attachment so that I can actually physically load down the document, see it at full resolution, because you can embed captions in the photo itself. I can open it up and see the captions.
And see all the metadata, too.
Meet all the exposures. Did they shoot it within the parameter of the assignment, what time it was? Why is this so grainy? Oh, they forgot to change their ISO on it, and that's creating that technical problem. Mm-hmm. More importantly, since I'm looking at the screen and I see a picture of the photograph, I can click on Microsoft's term, but the visual editing tools. I can literally draw on their photographs and draw attention to areas and to emphasize a specific point.
Right, so you're annotating over top of it, drawing the student's eye to that particular problem.
So then I'll hit a record button at the top and say, see where I've drawn the arrow? See that face? It's too dark. You need to dodge or burn, in this case, dodge that face so it's a little bit lighter so they'll reproduce or they can be seen.
Yeah, hitting record audio, and it's literally recording your voice.
And talk about being more efficient with your time. If you've taught for more than 14 seconds, you know how long it takes to write all these comments out. And yes, I can still type and draw boxes and write comments on there, but I think the audio is going to be effective because I can draw attention to one particular lesson for that individual. If they continually do this one problem, I can go back. Say, remember the photo that you took last week? Remember this? You're doing it again.
That's the other thing that I think many people underestimate the importance, that iteration. Plus, the other thing is basically you have an archival history of each one of those assignments, so you're showing improvement as you go away. You know, this is things we look for all the time and why we ask our students to put together portfolios of your work, because like anybody, the first time you do something, you're not very good at it. But hopefully, as you learn, and that's why you're here in college to learn, as you learn some of these new techniques and abilities, you're going to improve. And it's very obvious, you know, for somebody that teaches a subject area that's an expert in a particular area, you have that expertise that you can at a glance do a summation of whatever it is that a novice would never, you know, even consider. They don't know about it because they're a novice. They're starting out. They don't know anything about that particular field of study, whatever it is. So it'll be interesting to get, you know, I'm interested in seeing what your students think about that. So
the other thing I got to add is it was really easy to teach them how to use it. I thought it was going to take more time.
Yeah, we had that conversation that you thought you're going to have to spend 2 or 3 class periods. It's like, they're pretty intuitive, wasn't it?
Well, I thought I was going to be able, my classes are a little longer than a traditional format, so I thought I was going to be able to teach them in the time that I had allotted to teach it, but it only took me about 70%, 60% of the time. They're semi-computer literate. By the way, I'm teaching this in an intro class. Never seen these kids before. They've never worked with me. They can be first semester freshmen, and I'm teaching it with juniors and senior levels, and it took about the same amount of time because they were that enough computer literate. The other thing I wanted to add is, so I teach photography, but I'm in a department with people that care a lot about words, journalism. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I can imagine how helpful it would be for my colleagues to have someone write, for example, a news story. It's handed in to them. It's an attachment. The professor opens it up, highlights something in red, or draws arrows on it if they want to take a snapshot of it, so they can visually show them and say, see this paragraph. I've numbered it number 1. This is really awkward. I think you need to get this information up in the front and blah, 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 blah. Then the student can work on it. Send it back to the teacher and say, that's much better. It doesn't have to be this you give it to me, I give it back to you process. Now, granted, you can't do this for every assignment.
Right.
But this is very individual teaching.
Right.
And there's, I know as a student, there's nothing more gratifying and motivating when you feel like the professor is working specifically with you and has taken and given you attention. And it may be just one sentence like, okay, you can write this sentence better. Fix this.
Right.
Here's how I would write it. But how would you write it? How can you write it? That extra 10 minutes of interaction there might be the thing that makes them much more efficient three assignments down the line because they're motivated. There's nothing better than a motivated student.
Yeah, it's that formative assessment, and once the student knows, oh, you actually are looking at my work, the other thing that it does is it compresses that feedback cycle because I meet next Tuesday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, the traditional, here's, let me mark this up on a piece of paper or something and hand it back. That is completely blown away. That formative assessment literally can happen as the students are posting those. You can be, you know, looking at those, providing those comments the day of, but whenever they post these photos in there, you know, you have that opportunity to immediately, you know, give that feedback. And then this is the other thing I'm curious about. I don't know where the students are at. Have any of them used the app or anything? Are they accessing it on their smartphones?
I've told them avoid the app.
You got to walk before you run.
You said that to me a million times this summer. I'd want to build the Eiffel Tower before I learned how to set a brick.
Yeah.
But I cautioned him. I said, don't download the app yet because it throws so many options at you that it will confuse you. And I think, too, one other thing that I realized, I think, right away is you got to give them assignments right away so that they can get real comfortable with the tool. So after I literally taught this to them on the first day of class, and then I said, go make a selfie, insert it, and attach it, and write a caption for it. I said, if you don't do this for the next class period, drop the class. Because if you don't use knowledge right away, it just falls right out of your head. So just, I don't care what it is. You can even use a picture that's already on your phone. Just prove to me you can do these two functions, insert and attach, which are two different things. Write a caption. And also I remind them as part of our 360 environment that we provided here at Eastern that we also have one drive, which gives them a terabyte of storage. So they were like, we have this? I said, yeah, you already, you just have to start using it.
Right.
So yeah. And then the final thing I want to say is, you're saving a lot of trees here.
Mm-hmm.
You're saving a lot of resources here. You're saving a lot of expenses for your administration. So if you have to sell this, you can say, I can get rid of lots of paper because I'm just virtually sending this stuff back and forth. And the kids get into it because they're like, remind them, you're saving trees here.
It really has added, and all these things that we talk about pedagogically in the College of Education, and the other piece that you just mentioned there that popped into my mind is you're chunking that material. If you just hand somebody a textbook and here's everything you need to know about photography, you're overwhelmed as a new learner. But the other feature with OneNote is you literally add a page at a time that content. And I'm a big fan of doing things in reverse chronological order, so they always see the newest content at the top, but yet they still have that historical archive of everything that you've covered. So if they can't remember how to set that ISO setting that you just, you know, mentioned, oh, well, let me go back 3 days ago. We talked about that in class. And it's been my experience with students that if they do a paper-based notebook, can they put their hand on that piece of paper? Plus, if it's electronic, you can actually do a search through your digital notebook for ISO. And
the other thing it does automatically is it date stamps all your edits. Mm-hmm. So you can tell when they're working on it, when you last told them this. If they go in there and they get mad and they throw a document away, well, then they've thrown a document away because they control that notebook too. But
right,
it tells you that they did it.
And again, that's another philosophy that I've had throughout the years. I call that working with a net on the internet. You know, we've had that conversation. It's like, students, this is your work. You need to have a backup copy somewhere. Sometimes things do go wrong with technology. So if, you know, that page gets deleted somehow, do you have your original source material? And that's just good computing practice, good teaching practice out there, rather than throwing your hands up and saying, oh, the technology failed me again. You know, you can always recover. It's so easy to make those backups.
And I'm not sure we'll ever get rid of this, actually, but we, in our photo classes, we charge them a small fee that helps us buy new cameras, buy software, etc. But one of the things we do is we buy them a flash drive. We buy them in mass so we get them cheaper and say, you need physical backups. Don't trust the cloud. Or if the cloud's working, don't trust that you'll have internet connection to it that
right.
day. You always have to have a backup plan. And
again, good teaching to have that plan B out there.
I'm sure we don't say this to the people listening, but if you haven't backed up your lesson plans and all your stuff you've been doing for 20 years and you don't have the backup somewhere and it all crashes, boy, you're not going to have a good day.
No.
Or a month or a semester.
And that's my pain theory to backup. If it's going to be painful to recreate any of that, I couldn't imagine, you know, that happening. But, you know, that backup is a backup copy somewhere else in a different location. And the more important it is to you, the more formats and things that you have.
And the more likely it is to fail.
Exactly. It's that little circuit in there that says it's time critical. It's time for this to break. So, okay. So we could go on and on about that, but we're off to a great start this school year. OneNote has added another dimension, but it is mixing those good teaching methods and things, which makes it so effective, along with the timeliness and that 24/7, 365. It really does completely change the dynamics of the classroom. And as you said, I think your students have already picked up on it. They appreciate that, you know, you, the teacher, are spending that personal time with them. And that's the great thing here at EIU is we have small enough class sizes that we really know our students and we spend that extra time with them, and they appreciate that. My technology pick of the week this week has to do with OneNote, since we just spent a little bit of time there talking about OneNote and how we're incorporating it into one of the journalism classes here. For you math teachers out there, this is for you. Windows 10 just released the end of July, actually it's first part of August, so less than a couple weeks ago, the anniversary update for Windows 10, which added some additional functionality called Windows Ink. It's actually built into the operating system, but OneNote has long, for since 2003, supported digital ink. But one of the new things in the Windows 10 app is something called Math Ink. And what that allows you to do, if you have a digital ink-enabled device with a digital pen, as you write out an equation or something by hand, you know, freehand, you can take the lasso tool, circle it, and then there is a little math to ink button up in the top ribbon. And if you select that, it will convert your handwriting to the actual formula or whatever it is you're working on. It also has the ability to solve some of those questions if they're solvable. And I was just showing Brian an example here earlier. Now, I'm writing, whenever I was doing that demonstration, I was writing using my mouse, so it's much better if you have a tablet device. But it certainly, if you're a math teacher, science teacher, you know, you're even finding a lot of uses, I think, you know, with your journalism and that photography things. You've mentioned annotating and circling.
Or just scribbling and then wanting it to make it into something that's... Having used something similar to that in the past, it really is smart at figuring out my horrible handwriting sometimes.
Yeah, and mine too.
And more impressively, we remembered some algebra because we tested it and we actually got the answer right.
Yeah.
So we were kind of proud of ourselves.
Yeah. You know, and again, from the student point, another pedagogy thing here is it's very powerful when the student has those notes in archive, because writing out by hand, having that note to refer back to, that's just a click away. So that's my first one. The second one that I want to mention, if you've followed me on Twitter or out there on social media, especially all of you teacher educators out there, one of our students this semester got quite a bit of publicity, and you may have seen Dwayne Reed's video floating around out there on YouTube. I just pulled it up. He's got like 700,000 hits. So this has gone like viral. But let me just play a little bit of this, and you'll recognize the tune if you've seen it out there on social media.
Welcome to the fourth grade. So happy to meet you.
Okay, I'll just fade that out there, but instead of writing a traditional welcome letter to his students, he decided to make a little music video, congratulating him on that good work, and kind of a unique way to go out there and introduce your students.
And what a brilliant way to start the year, because I think, while I don't remember all my high school teachers real well, I remember my first, second, third, fourth, those teachers make such an impression, and if you can
important.
Get off on the right foot, that's a great way to do that.
So those are my two text picks this week, and Brian, what do you have this time?
Well, I before we get to my tech pick, I just want to mention that, you know, you let me come in last time and we mentioned the weather stations that can be so helpful to teaching sciences and math and all those sorts of things. Well, we're going to take credit for this. Apparently, we helped them sell out all their weather stations because they didn't have any for about 4 weeks, but they're back in stock. So if you listen to that and they're like, oh, they don't have these anymore, just this week, because I was looking to get another one, they're back. My tech pick really is something called the Canon Play with Canon Camera Controls. Let's try that again. Canon Play with Camera Controls website. And what it is, I teach photography, so this is a little bit specific. But you can go online, and I'm sure you're going to put this in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll have a link.
You can go online, and you can change the f-stop and the shutter speed and the ISO. And if you don't know what that is, that's the whole point of this, is to play with this, and it will show. Once you do the settings and click on the virtual button, it will make a picture of the scene and show you what the camera controls you are setting would do to that photograph if you made it. And you can do it all manually. You can do aperture priority, shutter speed priority. It's a really cool tool. And if nothing else, for math teachers, it's a great way to teach ratios and fractions because you're basically dealing with light shutter speeds. That's essentially what we do. So that's brought to us by the good people at Canon in Canada. So that website will be in your notes somewhere.
Okay, yeah, I'll provide a link in the show notes. And you might be seeing a theme here with the way that we teach, because we very much believe in one of the sayings I have in the ITC is hands-on often, minds-on always. Whenever you can take any concept, you know, an abstract concept like shutter speed, ISO, what are you talking about? You know, something that's unfamiliar to you. But whenever you can take that and provide, in this case, manual controls that you manipulate, in this case with your hand or your mouse, touchscreen, whatever it is, and more importantly, immediately see the results of those consequences of what happens if I turn my aperture down, you know, to 2.8 or, you know, bump it up, whatever it might be, you immediately see that. And again, I kind of envy students today, because back in the day, whenever I was learning this and whenever you were learning this, I'll date you here a little bit, but I taught high school and we had a darkroom class.
I started teaching here in the darkroom.
So just think about what we had to do back then.
Just yesterday, I decided to send off my two last film cameras, and I am keeping one old lens just as a visual aid to show what an aperture looks like in turning the lens, but it's almost shed a tear there where I sent those cameras off.
At the end of an era. But, you know, all these manipulative tools, and we do the same thing with math. There's Desmos calculator, and whenever you change, you know, the parameters of an equation, to immediately see that versus, again, back in the day, we used to call them the little hangman drawings where you drew like a little cross and you had an X and a Y and you solved the equation, literally by hand, you know, very painful. Here today, you just click a button and it's like, well, here's what happens whenever you change from a positive to a negative sign. That's very important, and our students have to do that themselves. We can't, you know, just doing a demonstration in class and things, that's not it. You know, they've got to actually apply it for that learning to stick. So very excited about all this technology-enabled learning that we have available for both us as teachers and especially for our students. That wraps it up for episode 192 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU ITC website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on our Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, I'm Tom Grissom.
I'm Brian Poulter.
Keep on learning.